So I think I will go ahead maybe and start our talk for this morning. It looks like there's not too much more that people I have to say right now, so we can go ahead and begin. So this year, as some of you know, but maybe not some of our newer people know, we have a new and very exciting theme that we're investigating for 2026, Transcendental Dependent Arising, or Transcendental Dependent Origination. And in February, we worked with faith. Last month, we worked with joy. And this month, we're moving on to a second form of joy, rapture, or piti, which is sometimes also translated as bliss. So, this should be a really exciting topic, right? I mean, bliss, rapture. You might think we might all be filled with anticipation and excitement about this. Go, oh, wow. But, based on what's been coming up as we, the teachers for Sunday, have been discussing this topic to get ready for this month, I've gotten the sense that it really isn't necessarily the case that rapture inspires just all sorts of anticipation and excitement. It can be a little bit different. This step in the path of transcendent dependent arising can also make us feel a lot of confusion and doubt. We might wonder what the experience of rapture actually is. We might have doubts about whether this is something we even have the capacity to experience in our practice. Some of us might feel that it just isn't part of our practice at all and doubt if it ever would be. And for those of us who have had some experience of it, maybe on a retreat, we might feel like it's just as overwhelming and challenging as it is pleasant. So whatever your experience with it, you might well have mixed feelings about it. And if you do, you're not alone in having these kind of mixed feelings. We mentioned before, there are three different varieties of joy in this path of transcendent dependent arising. First, there's pamoja, which is often translated simply as joy or gladness. And this is the joy we worked with last month. This is the one that stems from having faith to put the teachings into practice. So pamoja includes just feeling the joy of finding a path that we feel is going to work for us. You know, the joy we feel when we start to live from a place of kindness and honesty, and some of the ways that we've been harming ourselves or harming others, we begin to step away from, and we can feel the happiness of that and all the relief of that. But then after pamoja comes piti or rapture. And that's our topic this month. So you might think of rapture as kind of a like turbocharged form of pamoja. It's sort of like the energy and excitement and interest we feel as we discover and apply the teachings gets heightened to a more intense level. And well, pamoja is very much a kind of joy that we feel in everyday life and we can relate to really easily in everyday life. Piti is more the joy we feel actually in meditation itself. And generally, we're more likely to experience rapture in our formal meditation, especially if we do more intensive practice, like when we go on retreat. And in his commentary on this Upanishad Sutta, this sutta about transcendent dependent origination, Bhikkhu Bodhi says that for most people, for joy to reach this intensity that's suggested by rapture, a commitment to the practice of meditation is necessary. Now, we know that each step of transcendent dependent arising conditions the next step. And so we can kind of see how the joy of Pamoja conditions rapture, in the sense that rapture is a deeper and more intense version of joy. But this Pamoja also conditions rapture in the sense that it inspires and encourages us to go deeper into our meditation practice and to be more committed to our meditation practice. And then in our practice, PT arises. Now, this isn't to say that rapture is exclusively something we experience on the cushion. While it doesn't have so much of the everyday quality of Pamoja, there are some aspects of PT we might feel in our daily lives. And certainly, there are things we learn from experiencing PT and meditation that are very much relevant to our daily lives. So it isn't so esoteric as you might think. It isn't so, you know, just unrelated to any ordinary experience we have. So PT or rapture, it's one of the natural effects of deepening concentration in our meditation practice. And I think this is part of why it's something we experience more on the cushion, because we usually don't have that depth of concentration when we're going about our daily activities. Now, when I say that PT is something that arises naturally as concentration deepens, this can easily, if you're familiar with these practices, it can easily give you the idea that PT is something you can only experience by doing intensive concentration practices or jhana practices. And having that kind of sense of this might make it seem like it's pretty intimidating and pretty inaccessible unless you have the time to go on a long concentration retreat. But in fact, though, this isn't really true. We can develop the concentration that encourages PT to arise, definitely from steady attention on a single object like the breath, as you might do in concentration practices or jhana practices. That's a very fine way to develop PT, if that's your interest. But we can also develop concentration from steady attention on changing objects, the method we use in our Vipassana or insight practice. And in this case, your object first might be the breath, and then some sensation that arises in the body, then a thought, then back to the breath again, whatever's most predominant. You know how the practice goes. You know, you've had instruction in it. So the object might change, but the attention stays steady. The mindfulness stays steady. And the concentration deepens with that steadiness and that continuity of mindfulness. PT can also be encouraged when we practice metta or mudita, which is sympathetic and appreciative joy. And this is partly through the concentration we develop from keeping our attention steady on the phrases or on the object we're doing the practice for, but also because of the joy that arises from doing these kinds of practices. They can make us feel really happy. So as you continue to practice with any of these methods, your Vipassana practice, attention on the breath, metta, maybe a combination of all these, concentration naturally deepens. And when that happens, rapture or PT arises. And there are certain reflections that bring happiness to the mind too that can contribute to the arising of rapture. Reflections on the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. reflections on our generosity or virtue, reflections on Nibbana. So there are a variety of ways to encourage the arising of rapture. Not just, you know, this very narrow, you only have to do these deep concentration practices. So one way you can describe the arising of rapture, and one that makes a lot of sense to me and that fits with my own experience with this phenomenon, if you can call it that, is that as you continue to meditate, a point is reached where the mind is really connected deeply and fully to whatever experience is happening. You know, you're there with that experience. And this might be the breath. It might be some other object like the body sensations. It might even be the feeling of the body moving through space if you're doing walking practice. Might be metta phrases, as I was talking about before. And when this concentration is there, and it's not clouded, at least for that moment, by craving or aversion or delusion, by the mind off half there and half thinking about something else, the mind experiences a strong interest and delight in what's being known. And it's like this sense of, wow, I can really feel this experience. I can feel the wonder of it. I'm really knowing it. How interesting this is. How delightful it is. And I expect that you probably have had this kind of experience yourself in your own practice from time to time when you really feel every tiny bit of the breath and you're like, wow. Or maybe the body, all the different sensations. You're really there with it. It's like, ooh, my, there's so much more to this than I ever realized. And the joy that comes to this. So one of the definitions of PT is joyful interest. And Steve Armstrong always used to refer to this as delight of the mind in knowing. So that might also be a phrase that resonates with you. Just delight in knowing. And this delight in knowing is there no matter what's being known, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. The mind just feels really happy because it's connected and it's knowing. And I always used to love it when he would talk about this on retreat because his face would just kind of light up, you know. You could see how important it was to him and also how happy he would be if you could go into a report and your experience was like this. I mean, that was super happy. So if the this description of delight in knowing works for you, that's really great. Joyful interest, also wonderful. Now, Bhikkhu Bodhi calls this joyful interest the distinguishing feature of rapture. And I think it's probably its most important feature. All the other fireworks that sometimes go along with it that I'll talk about a little bit later, well, those things are nice, but I think they're really secondary to this delight of the mind in knowing and being connected and interested in what is arising in the body and the mind. And this interest is something that we can bring with us through all phases of our practice, on the cushion or off the cushion. Now, I don't consider myself to be a jhana practitioner, but when we were working with concentration as part of the Eightfold Path last year, I listened to a series of talks on cultivating the jhanas that was offered by Tricycle Magazine. Free talks, by the way. And the teacher said some really interesting things that I think are valuable whether we pursue jhana practices or not. And one of these was that when we practice concentration on the breath, it's important to develop a loving relationship with the breath. So we're not paying attention to the breath just so we can move on and get to something better. We're paying attention to it because we're really interested in it. We enjoy knowing all aspects of breathing. The mind delights in knowing the breath. And this feeling of care and interest applies not just to the breath, but to any object we're mindful of. And I think that's why this joyful interest, this joyful interest of PT. So thinking of that, you know, developing.
I have a 2-hour timer on my top.
Oops.
Make it some bumble.
Uh-oh. Let me make sure everybody is muted here. There we go. Okay. Yeah. So that might be something to think about, is just having this loving relationship with whatever you are aware of. And if you keep this sense of joyful interest and delight in knowing in the forefront as you explore PT this month, I think that will really serve you well. So notice it when you feel it in your sitting practice or anything else that is similar, you know, a sense of happiness or connection or appreciation, however it might arise for you, whatever words might describe it for you. And if you look, I think you'll find that it does arise. Of course, it isn't always there. There are going to be plenty of times when we feel bored or irritated or whatever it is. But there are those times when it does arise. And while this is something we typically experience more often and with more intensity in our meditation practice, we might notice it in our daily lives too. When we feel a real connection with whatever we're doing. Those times when all that worry about whether we're doing something right and whether we really should be doing something else, all that kind of stuff that blocks our ability to really connect with our experience fades away, and we're just present for that experience. So in the coming weeks, I think that we'll hear a lot more about the different ways in which we might experience rapture or connect with rapture in daily life. So I'm not going to say too much more about that right now. There'll be more in coming weeks. Instead, I'm going to go ahead and talk some more about our experience of rapture in meditation, because that's important too. So, especially when we're in retreat practice and we really have time for concentration to deepen, when the conditions are right, PT or rapture can arise, and it can have other features in addition to this sense of joyful interest. So as our concentration deepens and the hindrances, at least for a brief period, fall away, you know, the hindrances of craving, of aversion, of restlessness, of sleepiness, of doubt, fall away just for a while there, a strong energy can arise. And this is expressed in that sense of joy and delight that I've already mentioned. Those are very energizing kinds of factors. But it can express itself in other ways too. It might go beyond what we think of as joyful interest into a kind of bliss or ecstasy. Bhikkhu Bodhi describes it as spurts of mental energy that flood up to the surface of consciousness and inundate the mind with waves of joyous refreshment. And the energy of rapture might also express itself in the body. In our tradition, in descriptions of PT, there's a lot of emphasis on these strong and pleasant body sensations. And in his article on Transcendent Dependent Arising, Bhikkhu Bodhi offers a description of these different grades of rapture from the Visuddhimagga, which is a classic text on Buddhist meditation. And so in this description, first there's minor rapture that raises the hairs of the body. Then there's momentary rapture that rushes through the body with an intensity like streaks of lightning flashing in the sky. And then there's showering rapture that breaks over the body again and again like waves breaking on the seashore. Then there's uplifting rapture that causes the body to levitate, or at least feel like it's levitating. And finally, there's pervading rapture that completely fills the whole body, like a huge inundation fills a rock cavern. So, whoa, I mean, that's pretty dramatic, pretty dramatic. And when we hear descriptions of rapture like this, it's really easy to get intimidated and feel that this is something way out of our reach. So if you're feeling like that, I'd like to offer some points to consider that might reassure you a little bit and, you know, calm some of your worries about this. So first, this physical manifestation of rapture isn't something that you can make happen. But when conditions are right, it does. And you can get a sense of this in the words of the Hindu mystic and poet Mirabai, whose poem I read after our sit. She's kind of the queen of rapture in a way. And she says, "All I was doing was breathing. All I was doing was being. And the dancing energy came to my house." So I think it's often like that. It just sort of happens. When it happens, it happens. And a lot of what happens in our practice is that way. How things unfold isn't really under our control. We need to be there. We need to be mindful. But exactly what arises, we don't necessarily control it. So there's no need to try to force anything or make anything happen in terms of this rapture. Just be present and see what happens. And it's also good to remember that rapture is actually a pretty early step in this path of transcendent dependent arising. We have a lot farther to go to really get to true freedom. So you don't have to be a model of virtue. You don't have to be a practitioner with deep, deep realizations to experience piti. And on the other hand, if you do experience piti, that doesn't mean you've achieved deep realizations. You know, it's something that comes with concentration. And finally, and this is really important, whether or not you experience rapture in that physical way described in the Visuddhimagga isn't a judgment on the quality of your practice in any way. Not everybody experiences this bodily form of rapture. Some people might experience in a really mild way, some in a really intense way, some not at all. And in fact, when there's strong piti in the body, it's kind of a mixed blessing. At least that is what I have found, because it's really overwhelming and it can be really a challenge to work with. So don't judge your practice. If the main manifestation of piti in your practice is joyful interest and delight in knowing, that's perfect, because that's really the most important. And another thing that's good to consider is that the energy that's associated with rapture, this kind of phase of practice, doesn't only manifest in feelings of bliss and pleasant body sensations. It can show up in other ways too. And it can be useful to think of piti or rapture as a phase of practice that's characterized by strong energy and intensity. And if you were at Philip Moffat's retreat in December, you might remember he talked about this a little bit, how as concentration deepens, everything becomes more intense. We might feel the intense joy and pleasant body feelings that are traditionally described as piti, but there might be other forms of intensity too. Maybe deep feelings of devotion to the Buddha. Some people experience lights and colors. Maybe there are really vivid mental images or fantasies. Sometimes memories from the past arise with an intensity that makes you feel like you're reliving them. In the Zen tradition, instead of rapture, they talk about this intense phase of meditation as makyo, which can be translated as the uncanny realm because of these unusual mind and body experiences that arise. And so it might be that some of those things are more your experience rather than the more traditional rapture. So overall, when this kind of strong energy intensity arises in our practice, however we experience it, it's considered something positive. It's a sign our concentration is deepening, that we're moving below the surface of things. And this kind of joy and interest can be really a refreshment to the mind and an inspiration to us. So we want to practice even more. And it can also be a sort of cleansing process. So we see these suppressed memories or fantasies or other subconscious things that we might be identified with and entangled with. We can see them more clearly and we can release them. But because this can be so intense, it's easy to kind of go off the rails when this stuff happens and get caught up in these experiences in a way that's not so helpful. Or as Philip Moffat put it on his retreat, in a way that's not onward leading. So PD can be really pleasant. The bodies can be, sensations can be overwhelmingly pleasant. And the mental images that might arise during this phase of practice can be really compelling and really fascinating. And when we first experience these things in our meditation practice, we might think, wow, this is it. This is why I started this practice. This is what I always wanted. And we might think that our objective in sitting is just to get to these states and stay there. We might even think that, oh, wow, this is enlightenment. This is a nibbana. Woo, I'm there. Now, if we have these kind of thoughts, probably our teachers or our own experience of seeing these kinds of experience come and go will correct that misunderstanding before very long, or actually, you know, in nibbana and enlightened being. But even when we don't have such obvious misunderstandings of PD, or such clear and obvious attachments to PD, we can still be attached and entangled in more subtle ways. And I think probably most of us are in subtle ways. We might have subtle feelings of just kind of wanting that to happen, or maybe that sense of kind of waiting for it to happen, waiting. Or maybe it's that we're just preoccupied with it and feeling confused and overwhelmed, but we can't stop thinking about it. Or the attachment might show up in subtle feelings of disappointment when we have this lovely experience and then it passes and we start worrying about whether we'll experience it again. So in a way, you might think, well, this PT isn't such a good thing because you can really get attached. But looking at it another way, it can be a really good opportunity for us to learn to work with pleasant experience in a skillful way. When we see PT arise in us and then disappear and feel all the feelings that go along with that, we really see how much we want pleasant experience. And maybe even more, how much we want intense experience. And it's good to be aware of that. It can also be a good place to notice the dukkha of wanting. For example, we might be in the midst of a really pleasant body sensation, feeling blissful, just everything is going great, and then we start to worry. How can I hold on to this? What can I do to get more of this? Is this going to go away? How can I keep this? And these thoughts can be really subtle. They can just be whispers. And yet, even if they're very subtle, that pure appreciation, enjoyment of this beautiful experience is marred by this anxiety and this worry, even if it's pretty subtle. And this can also be a good opportunity to see how what's initially really pleasant can change to being not so pleasant. And so PD can be extremely delightful. But if it goes on for a long time, like if you're on a retreat and it just goes on, it can be overwhelming and exhausting and you can just feel like you can't sleep or anything. We might even start wishing for it to go away. So all of these things are really powerful lessons. And the more clearly we see them, the less likely we are to kind of cross that line from appreciating and celebrating PT to being attached and obsessed with it. And I think, as you can easily imagine, what we learn in meditation from working with this rapture states can apply in our daily lives too. Because isn't that what we're trying to develop in all our experience of the pleasant? Whether they're sense pleasures, whether they're pleasures in meditative experience? To be able to enjoy them, appreciate them, but to let them come and go and recognize their impermanence. And the experience of PT can be a really fertile ground for this kind of exploration. So we have a lot to explore here with rapture. A lot to explore. You might need to expand your definition of what this experience is and how it might show up for you. Joyful interest and delight in knowing are wonderful descriptions of rapture. And I think these probably are more accessible than some of the more intense body things that go along with this sometimes too. And if you feel that all those kind of bells and whistles are irrelevant to your practice, you can see that joyful interest isn't. That's irrelevant for everybody. And it could be, for you, our focus on rapture this month might be an invitation to reflect more deeply on the kinds of intense experiences you do have in meditation, whether it's intense joy, body sensations, visions, memories, whatever, and to consider, how can I work with these things in a skillful way? Maybe you'll feel like you're undertaking a master class in appreciation versus attachment as you work with PT. But the one thing I would encourage you to do is don't dismiss it with the idea that it's not for you. There are lots of aspects to this and lots of ways in, and I think that if you keep your mind open, you will find your own way to know this mind state. So, thank you very much for your kind attention. Thank you for listening. And I think that we will go ahead and have a little time for discussion in breakout rooms. Welcome back, everybody. I hope I didn't cut you off, but I wanted to make sure that we had enough time for any whole group discussion that we wanted to do and also to have our announcements and stuff. So we're back together, and I would welcome any comments, questions, sharing that you would like to have about what you talked about in your groups, your thoughts about rapture. The floor is open. You can, there, I can see everybody, so you can raise your hand or you can use your little virtual hand too. Either way works. So the floor is open. Yes, Julie.
Hi, thanks, Lyndall. Great talk. I just wanted to add something that has been really helpful to me is knowing the kind of neuroscience behind the benefits of practicing rapture or practicing moving towards rapture or happiness, and how the more you linger on it and try to go there, the easier it becomes. It's supposed to be very, very good for your brain. So just want to throw that in.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, thank you. And I think that is true, you know. And you can, there are different ways to cultivate it. And yeah, it is good for you. It is good for you. So thank you for sharing that. Let's see, Nikhil or Lillian. I don't know who it is, but either of you or both.
Yeah, I guess something with your talk that I really appreciated was kind of how you you talked about kind of like the joy in knowing, or just kind of the joy of like kind of just like in just like knowing what's present. And that's something I've related to a lot. And I think that's something where like it's one of the reasons that for me, like where the five recollections are so helpful and kind of like so meaningful, because it's kind of taking this thing that we're kind of conditioned to kind of like fight against so much. Like it's just like the nature of our existence and the nature of our reality. And there's a lot of ease in coming to just the more of just an acceptance of this is just how it is. And so, yeah, I think like, you know, something I was mentioning in our small group was that with our daughter, you know, she's only two, but the concept of death came up really early because you'll just see like dead bugs around the house. Oh, and yeah. So just like explaining that. And so it was something where we tried not to bring, bring something to death that isn't there, and just kind of like have a lot of openness around it and be open to the fact that she's going to die. We're going to die. Every living being dies. And like, you know, sometimes we're alive. Like, you know, there's moments where we're alive, and then there's a moment where we're not alive. And it's just, I think something that's been interesting is that seeing that even though, you know, she's only two, so we don't know like how, you know, she develops, you know, has how things change, but like, at least right now, there isn't a lot that I've never seen an aversion or a fear or anything around death. And it's just kind of like an understanding of like, oh, sometimes something's dead and, you know, sometimes it's not. I'm like, kind of like, even kind of like seeming to have some understanding of the fact that she will die at some point, we will die at some point. And so that's just been something that's kind of interesting where, I think for like us, like we're trying to like, you know, we're working with the five recollections, right? But it's still like, you know, something we're very much working with and probably always will be, but it's interesting just to see that it's not necessarily something that has to be, it's not what's present, right? So it's not what has to be present for someone. So that's been something that's going to be cool to see.
Yeah. And I really like the fact that you brought up the joy of knowing in terms of, you know, real wisdom, mm-hmm. you know, so there's the one kind of joy in knowing, which is the joy of really connecting with your present experience. But what you're talking about really is the joy in understanding the Dhamma. And mm-hmm. that's a huge joy too. Yeah. So thank mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate that. Anybody else? I kind of thought there might be all sorts of questions and comments about this rather odd subject, but Candace.
I was thinking about when you were talking, and I just loved your talk and all the variety you gave us to think about, was how sometimes in meditation this really kind of excited sensation comes up, and it pulls me out of the meditation because I'm fighting it. I'm saying, no, I want to be serene. I don't want this excitement, not right now. That's not what I was intending. And now I'm real curious about just staying with that. Just saying, oh, excitement is arising. I mean, I think that'll be a really interesting meditation because I'm fighting against this pleasurable feeling in meditation because it's not what I planned.
Oh, that's so interesting. And, you know, I can see that too, because you may not be thinking this, but I can imagine the thinking of, oh, this is too pleasant. If I let myself experience it, I'll just get attached to it.
Exactly.
I want to go there. Yeah. Which is not really the most skillful way to deal with pleasant, but yeah. Thank you. I would encourage you. Stay with it. And investigate that kind of trying to push it away too. Judith.
Yeah, thanks, Lyndall. That was a really good overview. Very, very useful.
Good.
And one thing that came up in the group that I have been also thinking about is, okay, so we've got these four different kinds of joy. basically, on this transcendental dependent arising. We've got joy, we've got rapture, we've got tranquility, we've got happiness, you know. And I think even though it's very interesting to examine each one, as we're going to do, at the same time, when we're actually experiencing our, whether it's meditation or not meditation, I think we need to watch out, at least I certainly do, to not get too hung up on saying, oh, let's see, is this piti or is this pamoji or is this, you know, sukha, or, I mean, you know, get out of, it's like, it's nice to have this clarity of teaching, but at the same time, there's the experience.
Yeah.
And we don't need to be questioning what am I experiencing? Because then we're out of the experience and we're in our heads. And I know I was getting there because I was listening to Joseph Goldstein, and he's saying, well, that rapture gives way to sukha, to happiness. But then I think, but wait, on this sequence, it gives way to tranquility. And what is this all about? And I've spent at least 5 minutes fretting about that, and I thought, wait a minute, this is crazy, you know, this is not in the spirit of the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. that is very true. I think that's a good caution to not just get so hung up on trying to categorize everything that you don't actually, and some of them could be a little of both, a little of all. Yeah. And then also the sense in which this is a progressive experience,
right.
That is true, especially if you are on a retreat and you're meditating every day and, you know, there's a tendency for these things to appear that way, but it's not like you just go through them and boom and you're done. You can move back and forth. Different ones can come up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, getting this idea that it has to be a certain very rigid idea about it,
right,
doesn't right. help either.
Right.
No, it really doesn't help. It kind of gives you a sense of how these things are related, but, you know, any path like this is sort of, a map like this, it's a map. It's not the actual experience. And everybody's actual experience will be a little bit different, probably.
Right. And we're also dealing with translations.
Right. Exactly. That's true.
From Pali words. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I guess we are almost out of time. So I had better very quickly, I'll give you a few announcements here.